Now being recorded.
Okay. Hello? Okay. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So please state your name for the for general purposes.
What was that?
State your name for my interview. Say your full name.
My name is Prince John Gaither Elon.
Okay. And Miss, do you like to be called Dr. Gaither? Because I see that you have Dr. What would you like to be called? Prince Gaither?
No, Prince is fine.
Prince is fine?
Yeah.
Okay, Prince. Okay, could you give me, tell me a little bit about the company. I see that you're the CEO.
Yeah.
Of Sovereign Global and International Health and Wealth Company. Can you tell me a little bit about this business?
Absolutely. Most people in my life, I see operate from two main problems: economic slavery and chronic disease. Any person that is in poverty, any person that is suffering from a disease, is not free. They're not at liberty to pursue life any vigorous in the way God intended. So Sovereign Global and International is about using health, which is the first wealth, and wealth to make people financially free and healthy. So SGI has a number of subsidiary companies here and abroad that work in various industries, anything from vitamins and herbs to database development to websites to project management, conflict resolution, geopolitical analysis, a number of things. The main point is I created SGI because there is a problem of global poverty and global disease that the average person in this country is not aware of that's going to decimate and destroy most people. So my goal is to teach people, first of all, how to think like a wealthy person, what are the actions required to be wealthy, and then how to realize the first wealth is your health. And that's something most of us in this country are destroying.
So how did your company go about ensuring that these that people receive the type of health benefits, as you say, like nutrition, and increase their wealth? How do you implement this?
Well, we build it one relationship at a time. So the way I operate is I look for individuals, couples, families, communities, cities, counties, and even going to be branching out to countries who want to have a comprehensive plan that addresses the problems of poverty and health. So the best way to build a network is to build a relationship. And we're already born in networks when we come into this world. The first network you're born into is your family. Oftentimes, we don't exploit the networks that we have to our benefit or mutual benefit. They often exploit us. So as you mentioned before, because I also read about you before you interviewed me, it's very important to have a social aspect to your business, an educational component. So I've been blessed to study a number of fields, so I know quite a bit about the global economy. I also have contacts all around the globe. If you want to talk about Europe or Asia, you want to talk about Africa, I have contacts there. So I can tell people, honestly, what I see going on and what people tell me. In this country, most people are financially ignorant. They don't have a budget. They waste money with the banks they deal with. They're not investors, they're not philanthropists, and they don't save. The average American has nothing saved up for retirement. So just imagine what the reality of most of us is going to be when we get retirement age. We're going to be dependent on the government. I believe a sovereign person is a person that's dependent on themselves and their network of fellow entrepreneurs and investors. So what I do is I teach people how to think like an investor. I then give them ways to invest available capital into various investments. The main problem that I have in doing that is I work with a country that is very arrogant. Americans are very arrogant. They're very oblivious to what's going on, and they think they know it, and they don't. So as things get worse, my company is going to flourish. Because a lot of what I've been saying for the past, you know, 3 to 5, 10 years is coming to pass.
Okay. So, just for example, just say you have a family right now that introduced you to this family. And I said they live in poverty. They don't have any health insurance, nothing for health care. How would you go about implementing, how would you help them? How would your services help them?
Well, and the first thing I'll say is it's not free, which means I have an organization that does charity work for that kind of population.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what you asked me, I would ask them, how did you get here? Tell me about your life. How did you wind up in this situation? Do you want to get out? The one thing I don't do is I don't make people do things they don't want to do, and I don't take advantage of their ignorance. So I have to start a process of self-examination. Because you have to understand something, Miss Allison. Poverty is not natural to the natural world. The natural world that we live in regenerates itself. It goes from summer to fall to winter to spring. Poverty is evidence of people taking advantage of other people.
I'm sorry, you said poverty is... You faded out on me. You said poverty is evidence of what?
It's evidence of people taking advantage of other people. So poverty is not a natural state of the human race. I explain it to you like this. When two people are in love with each other, nobody is second. Everybody's first. Because when you love someone, you want to serve them. It's a win-win relationship. Poverty is evidence of somebody or nobody benefiting. So it's an evidence of hate somewhere. So for me to help a family, we got to examine how we got here. We also have to ask ourselves, do we want to leave where we are? If we do want to leave where we are, what does it take for us to leave? Then we got to say, what resources do we have to effectuate this journey? Now, a lot of people aren't ready for that. But that's the only kind of work I do. Because when you tell people what they want to hear, you do a disservice. And the reality is, when things get bad, that leads to anger and hate, not appreciation and gladness.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Give me some examples to illustrate the challenges you faced in starting your company.
Well, I'm a first-generation college student. I grew up in a rural area. I come from a broken family. I come from drug dealers, drug users, prostitutes. I'm the first in my family to go to college, so all the things that I have done have been against the grain. So you talk about being an entrepreneur, being a business person, that's not something that where I come from, what people do, at least not legally. They do a lot of illegal things. So the difficulty is getting away from what you came from and doing something different. If you talk about serving underserved populations like minorities when it comes to financial planning, insurance, banking, investment, it's difficult because these populations have been exploited by this country. African Americans were slaves over four centuries. The amount of wealth that was taken from them is incalculable. So they're playing catch up. They can spend money on a cell phone, won't buy life insurance. They got cable, won't get an annuity. The priorities are mixed up. They can put chrome wheels on their car, but they don't have a wheel. The biggest difficulty is educating people and changing their mindset. That is the battle in my business.
So what's your overall strategic plan to get them to change their mindset? You said education. So if education is one of the ways, then how do you educate them?
Well, one thing, I believe you do it two ways. You have your feet on the ground in the community, and you leverage technology. To be a true...
So define that a little bit more. Like, you have your feet on the ground in the community.
If you look back to the 1950s and 60s, when you had great social change in this country, you had everything being community-based. If you look at most of the strategies that governments use to so-called address problems, their feet are not on the ground. Their feet are in their offices, which means they don't really want to know the reality of the people they supposedly serve. If you put your feet on the ground, you're going to build relationships. People are going to know about you. They're going to look to you. You become a resource. And if you do it with an integrity and a genuine care, you're going to stand out more. Because anybody can talk beautifully, but everybody doesn't care or love beautifully. That's one of the things that makes me stand out. My character is genuine, and it sets me apart. The other thing is, we are a technologically dominated society. We're either on Facebook, Twitter, we got a Bluetooth headset, we're on a cell phone, we're on the internet. We are technologically on it. In order for you to reach a bunch of people, you must leverage technology, but you must do so without losing the human factor. So while I'm using these things like Sidetick to spread my message, I also slow it down to bring it back to, what is this really about? We can't lose a human relationship, because if we lose that, nothing else matters. And that's what we're doing. So when it comes to money, that is a conversation that's very sensitive for a lot of people, because a lot of people have struggled financially. I teach people to let go of that negative energy and just flow. Because people who are rich didn't get rich by themselves. They got a little bit at a time. They got into a system of wealth. Most of us live in a system of slavery. And that's why we send up the SOS. I need help. People who are rich, like Warren Buffett, they operate in a system of wealth. I help people leave the system of slavery and create systems of wealth.
Okay. Well, the next question is, how has the experience that you've had during the entire career influenced the way you now run your own company?
I'm much more relaxed. When I first graduated from undergrad, I worked in corporate America in sales. I did very well. but I realized that I was too intelligent for the position that I had. They didn't want to promote me. And as I became honest with myself, I realized that I wasn't created to be told what to do. I was a born leader. I need to have my own companies. I also realized that no company is ever going to pay me what I was worth, and I'm priceless. You can't put a price tag on a genius intellect. Now, anybody can say that. The question is, can you back it up with what you do, products and services? So, for me, talking about money and wealth is fun. Because once you understand what it really takes to be wealthy in the physical world, it's just like 1 + 1 = 2. It's just common sense. So for me, I'm much more relaxed than I used to be. And I'm confident without being arrogant. Now what I will tell you is, having a business that operates outside the United States is crucial. Because your biggest gains are going to be in the international market, not the United States. Asia, particularly China, also Taiwan, big markets, New Zealand, Australia, and North America, Canada. The average person in America, in my field, doesn't look outside its own country. My whole country is the whole world. That's one thing that sets me apart. I'm a global entrepreneur.
So how did you actually introduce your company internationally? How did you do that?
Well, once again, it goes back to building a network. You have to be willing to talk to people and tell them what it is you do, and you have to be willing to listen. Over the past 3 to 4 years, I've been traveling internationally, building my contacts, sharing with people who think like I do what it is I do, and breaking bread with these people. The best way, really the only way to run a business is having a referral and prospect pipeline. From an international standpoint, I have walked in rare circles, and it's given me an advantage over where I am in the United States, because your average person in insurance, in banking, the stuff that I know, they haven't even thought of, because all they see is what's in front of their face. They haven't went out and made relationships. So when you look at emerging markets like Africa, which is an emerging market, this is an underserved population. Look at South Africa. All they have are one business operating in South Africa. Gives away free products and services. This is going to be a $1 billion company. The thing is, these are the people that nobody wants to deal with, because they say these people will not spend money. They don't want anything. That's not true. No one has came to them and said, "You want your money. You want to learn about what you need and what you want." That is the untapped market. The biggest market in the world today are the people who are in poverty, who want and need products and services, but lack the capital to buy it. So it seems to me, if you build these people up with entrepreneurship, you kill two birds with one stone. You give them the money they need to buy what they want, and you also bring about social change at the same time. That's what I call the DeVay concept.
I'm sorry, repeat the concept, please.
It's called DeVay. D-E-V-E. That stands for development encompassing virtually everyone, everywhere, and everything.
Okay, so tell me, describe a typical day for you.
Well, now I work, because I work with different divisions of my company, what I do is I tell you what a typical day is for my insurance and asset management. The previous week, I've already set up my calendar for the week that I'm in. So I already have my client list and my call list. I'll spend the first part of the day making phone calls on Monday, reconfirming appointments and setting new appointments. I'll then spend anywhere from 3 to 5 hours in the field writing new business. Now, I'm also developing a nonprofit project and some projects with local colleges. So sometimes my days run anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a day, Monday through Thursday. Friday is a half day. Saturday I don't work, and I'm back on it on Sunday. So the typical day for me, I'm on the phone, I'm on the internet, and then I'm out in the field. But even though I'm busy, I don't really have any pressure or strain on me, because I like to flow nice and easy. And I find that when I operate like that, it puts people at ease and it makes me more successful. I come across as being relaxed, but not lax, personable, but also professional.
So how do you make time for family and friends, your personal life?
Well, I don't. And I'm going to pick on the word that you used. I can only take the time that God has given me and prioritize the use of that time. So when I'm working for what I care about the most, which is God, my family, my friends, and really the whole human race. I'm a very big stickler for keeping a schedule. If I allocate 2 hours to a project, I'm going 100% in that project. When the 2 hours are up, I put it down. If I'm going out on the town, spending time with a friend or a young lady, when I'm doing that, that's when I'm doing 100%. But when it's over, it's over. I'm going to the gym, working out, same thing. The biggest thing is a life out of balance is a life that's going to come to an abrupt end. So the key is, while you work hard, you got to play hard, you got to take care of yourself, you got to rest and rejuvenate. So I also do work in meditation. I do work in martial arts, massage therapy, naturopathic medicine. So I believe in living an organic life, a life that finds its own flow and works naturally. You ain't gotta force it. It comes all on its own.
Okay. So how do you keep up with the current events in your industry?
I have a couple of publications that I subscribe to. I'm also a member of a number of organizations that gives me reliable intelligence. I'm also an avid reader, and I'm also an author. So part of me doing my job is writing about what's going on in the financial world. You saw a little taste of what I do with my blog. I've also got some research projects. So that's kind of the main way I keep up with what's going on out here in the world. The one thing I don't do, I don't subscribe to mainstream media. So NBC, ABC, Fox News, a lot of that stuff is garbage when it comes to really knowing what's going on in the financial world. You can't trust it. You can't trust what you're being told. And you got to run the numbers yourself. One thing about me, if a person is my client, I challenge them to test me. Hold me accountable, because if I tell you something, I can back up what I'm saying.
Okay, so I'm going to test you right now. You said that you're a poet?
I'm what?
You said you were a poet?
Yes,
Okay. Well, give us a sample of some of your poetry.
Oh, gosh. Let's see here. I wrote a poem when I was in college called Legacy of Shame and Disdain. That was a poem I wrote about the enslavement of Africans and the treatment of both men and the women in that experience. I want to say the last poem I wrote, I think it was about a young lady that captivated me. And it went something like this. In the apex of the day, when you're going your way, and I'm going mine, I sigh and I cry, and I wonder why. I remember your eyes, brown as they are, looking at me from afar. Reflecting on the scar that I made, not you, wondering why I wasn't true. A choice that I made because I delayed the way that I played. That's what you say. So here I am, a supposed man, doing what I can, but not what I can. All I can say is damn. But that's the way it seems to go. You know the right thing, but you don't do it though. And I can't pull up the name of that